My name is Thomas Jones. I'm from a small town called Big Stone Gap in Virginia. And I'm the son of two coal miners.
You get the sense that Thomas Jones is ready to break this game wide open.
Thomas Jones is the absolute key ingredient to Chicago offensively in that ball possession offense. Thomas Jones ran right by him, right through his gap.
So Thomas Jones, he really has been their best offensive player all season long.
Yes, lock it up. TJ, how's the vanilla? TJ, who's your mama? Put him on the board. Hausha Mazzoli. Got it.
Championship.
Welcome in to another playoff edition of the Thomas Jones Fantasy Football League podcast. I am your host, your commissioner, and somehow still alive in the playoffs manager, Matt Southall. Thank you for tuning in. Woo! What a weekend of football. Boys. This one was a wild one. Oh, so much transpired. We'll go through the Week 15 playoff matchups, the two playoff matchups that we had. We'll see how active waivers are this go-round on Wednesday. Don't really need to spend too much time on the standings at this point in the season, so we'll probably spend a little bit of extended time on the Week 16 matchups with only four teams remaining. Some more devastating injuries across the league this past week with Mahomes, Micah Parsons going down with ACL tears. Devontae came up limp with that hamstring in that Rams game. Woody Marks was supposed to have a big week versus the Cardinals. Did score that touchdown, technically not a rushing touchdown. It was a fumble recovery. Advanced for a few yards for a touchdown. Hopefully he's back this week versus Vegas. And those are just the more notable names. The Texans did indeed take care of business versus the Cardinals, which was a welcome sight. Trey McBride ate the Texans defense up, though. Tell you what, Texans only allowed four touchdowns from tight ends going into that game, and McBride had two. Cowboys defense led up 34 to Minnesota on Sunday night, all but eliminating them from the playoff picture. I think they would need to win out, and the Eagles would need to lose out in order for the Cowboys to get in, which seems very unlikely. Texans, on the other hand, sitting pretty in one of the wild card spots. Jacksonville playing Denver this week is probably the most important game of the season for the AFC South standings. Jacksonville loses, Texans win. They'll both be tied at 10-5. And if the Texans and Jaguars finish the regular season with the same record, the Texans own the tiebreakers. So this week, very important as far as who goes on to win the AFC South. Houston's taking on Vegas, which is a very winnable matchup. Texans offense finally showed up. 40 points in this one versus the Cardinals. It was nice to see some consistent offense throughout the game. I believe the Texans scored on the first five drives in that one. Even got some red zone scoring, which has been unusual. So much to get into. So many possibilities. Let's talk about it.
Last week recap.
Thank you very much, son. We begin our weekly recap with the highest scoring winning team.
What does high score mean? New high score, is that bad? What does that mean? Did I break it?
From week 15.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. God hates Jags. Persevere. Over, Indica guides us 164.9 to 164.76. Matt beats Russell by 0.14 points. That margin of victory is essentially three passing yards, as they are all worth 0.05 points apiece. That margin of victory is less than two rushing yards, less than two receiving yards. This will officially go down as the narrowest playoff win in league history. previous record was held by Matt Beiler when he beat Eric by 0.5 points, a half a point, which is essentially 5 rushing yards, 5 receiving yards. You get the point. That happened in week 14 of 2015. So a first round matchup there between Beiler and Eric came down to half a point. This one, less than 1/5 of a point. This game will go down as the 9th most points in playoff history by an individual. That is me, getting up to that 164.9. It is not my top scoring playoff game of all time. That came in week 14 of 2014 versus Tim, where I put up 206.65. Believe it or not, that is not the highest scoring playoff game by any team in league history. That record goes to Craig. Craig put up 213 versus Beiler in week 15 of 2015. That game versus Beiler and Craig is actually the highest scoring, the highest combined playoff score of all time. They put up a combined score of 367 points. That game versus Tim in week 14 of 2014, where I scored 206, we combined for 334. That is the second most ever. Russell and I's matchup would go down as the 4th highest combined score in playoff history. We got up to 329. And last but not least, according to League Legacy, it's always had a list of what they call top matchups. Here's the definition of their top matchups. We ranked every matchup in your league history by importance, by performance, rivals, game of the weeks, and more. This is the top of the top. And it's got games in here from all the way back in 2010, the first year of the league. That happened to be a Sean 3-point playoff victory over me in the second round of the playoffs. That's number 5 on the list. And lo and behold, Russell and I's week 15 playoff matchup is number 1. The top matchup in league history, according to League Legacy, ranked on performance, rivals, games of the week, and importance. The majority of the top 5 are very closely contested matchups. 4 of those matchups from the top 10 are playoff matchups. Gives you some idea where it's pulling from. Nonetheless, whew, let me tell you, I was going through it. Absolutely going through it in this one. As I mentioned last week, Russell and I did not have any guys going on Thursday. Neither of us had any players playing on Sunday night or Monday night. So all of our players from both of our teams were playing at noon and in the afternoon games. And boy, oh boy, did that not disappoint. I didn't have too many guys going in the noon games that I felt real confident about. My big hitters were playing in the afternoon games. My Josh Jacobs, Kyren Williams, JSN, throwing Blake Corum in there as well, just because he's done so well alongside Kyren. But I had all those guys playing in the 3 and 4 o'clock games. Had it not been for Trevor Lawrence and his historic performance, he had 4 touchdowns at half. He ended the game with 6 touchdowns. Oh my gosh. Trevor Lawrence, my savior. I flirted with playing Lawrence last week, even though it was kind of a meaningless game. Didn't end up doing it. He was on the bench. I picked him up last Sunday morning after the Jaden Daniels Mariota news. And boy, am I glad I did. Worth going through the full stat line. 330 and 5 passing touchdowns for Lawrence. Add in 51 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown. Gets him up to 58.6 fantasy points on the week. To put this performance in perspective, we go to a Yahoo Sports article that had some stats that are worth mentioning. No quarterback has ever scored more points in week 15 than Trevor Lawrence did on Sunday. Aaron Rodgers got within a couple of points from him in week 16 of 2018. Week 16, way back in 2018, would have been the championship week before they expanded to a 17-game regular season. If you'll recall, Sean and Colton met up for the championship in that one. Neither of those teams had Aaron Rodgers playing in that game, so it didn't really have too much of an impact on our playoff matchup way back in 2018, or our playoff outcomes, I should say. So I think it's safe to say this is by far the most historic and important quarterback performance in the history of our league. Lawrence's stat line is the 13th best fantasy quarterback performance in NFL history, and that's counting a few games that were played in the 60s before fantasy football was really a thing. It's the second best fantasy quarterback game ever in December, behind only Josh Allen's big, big performance in week 14 of 2024. Scored like 60-something. And the last paragraph of this article says, "The irony, of course, is that Lawrence probably wasn't even being started in too many leagues. In two quarterback or super flex formats, Lawrence probably got the nod. But in one QB lineups, he likely wouldn't have been viewed that way by many, even against the Jets. But for those who did start Lawrence, he looks like a superhero." Indeed, he does look like a superhero, at least to this guy. Probably a supervillain to somebody else in the league. So Trevor Lawrence was really the only good thing I had going for me in the noon games. Four touchdowns at half, and everybody else seemed to really, really be struggling. AJ Brown didn't have a catch at halftime in that Eagles game. Ended up getting one in the second half, finished with 11.1 points. Only two catches for 41 yards, but hey, I'll take it. Literally needed every single yard. But Jaden Higgins disappointed for me in that Texans game. He finished with one catch for 4 yards. I didn't have him in all week. I had Booty in all week, and Booty ended up with 3.5 points. Only a 2.6 point difference, but hey, in this matchup, it almost mattered. Kincaid also let me down. He had 3 for 34, 4.9 points. But boy, oh boy, did Blake Corum, Kyren Williams, and Josh Jacobs, and JSN all step up for me in the afternoon games. 22 from Jacobs, 21 from Kyren, 16 from JSN, and 13 from Corum. They absolutely saved my season. I was down to a 10% probable winner going into the afternoon games, if I'm not mistaken. And going into the fourth quarter of the afternoon games, I was down to 5%. I was behind the whole way, but my team never gave up, never surrendered. I kept telling Missy throughout the day, I'm going to score 10 touchdowns and lose somehow. But lo and behold, it did not happen that way. And I think what was, again, so magical about this is that both of our teams finished playing at the same time, but we also had players from the same offense in the last afternoon game. That Packers game, that Packers-Broncos game, was the last 3:30 game to finish. I had Jacobs, he had Reed, and it was razor thin. I mean, that whole fourth quarter of those afternoon games was just, I can't remember sweating out a fantasy matchup like this ever. Started playing in 2008. I was going through it. I was on my knees in my living room. I could barely watch. And then it comes down to the last drive. The Packers get the ball back, and Josh Jacobs isn't on the field. He's not out there. Packers had their third down back in there. And then Love rolls out to the right. He throws it, targeting Jaden Reed. Short arms it, one hops it to him. My life flashed before my eyes. I couldn't believe it. Then, luckily, on the next play, I see Reed on the sideline. Jacobs still not out there. The game goes final. I'm up by 0.14 points. I still can't believe there hasn't been a stat correction of any type. Oh, man. It was incredibly stressful. I tried to call Russell as the Packers game was coming down to the final minutes just so we could sweat it out together. He later told me that he was watching the game on his phone in his car and he didn't want to mess it up. Russell, always classy in defeat, as we spoke yesterday. He is currently on the lookout for a new place of residence, and we'll keep track of that going forward. Whew! My starters got to 147.9. And that stat line one more time, 330 and 5 through the air. 51 rushing yards, one rushing touchdown. Just unreal. At 273 and 5 on the ground, 221 and 2 through the air, 12 total touchdowns. Could be wrong about this as well, but I believe that is the most touchdowns scored by any team so far this season. I didn't have a whole heck of a lot of yards, which explains why it was still so close. Also, Russell putting up 164. It's a lot of points to try and overcome. The only touchdowns I left on the bench were JJ McCarthy's. Darren Waller did come through for me on Monday night. I went to bed pretty early Monday night, so I missed the majority of that Miami-Pittsburgh game. But he had 7 for 66 and 2 touchdowns. We'll see if he Let's see if he works his way into my lineup in week 16. Spoiler. McPherson really let me down in this one. I thought that was going to cost me the game. That goose egg he put up in the noon game just didn't get any chances to kick the ball all day. Eagles defense came through for me in a huge way. Shutout versus the Raiders. So glad I had the foresight to pick them up back on December 3rd. 17 points from them. And again, I needed all of it. Woo! Russell. Tried to get sneaky on me. Picked up Jackson Dart, who'd been on my roster for months. Played him. Ended up getting 28.5 points. Rocky start for Dart, but he ended up coming through in the second half of that game versus Washington. Jonathan Taylor probably didn't have the week he was hoping for. Ended up with 11.6 points, but he got 30 out of ETN versus the Jets. ETN's been very good recently, and I should not have underestimated him. He's been right at 20 for every game except for the Tennessee game. Put up 30 in this one. Chase had 19.2. Wandale and Michael Wilson, 13.9. When that Michael Wilson touchdown happened, I was just sick to my stomach. I knew that was going to hurt. We talked about Jaden Reed earlier. He ended up with 8 points in this matchup. And also during the afternoon games, this arguably cost Russell the matchup. Theo Johnson, his tight end, scored 8.7 points. Not bad for a tight end. But on his bench, Colby Parkinson, 22 points. He went for 5, 75, and 2 in that game versus Detroit. One of those touchdowns was a phantom touchdown. Honestly, that was one of the more egregious calls I've seen in the NFL this year, if not the most egregious call. He was clearly down on the 1 yard line. I don't want to hear about the whole bobbling thing as he was going in. You can't just be bobbling it after you've already touched the ground and then they spot the ball where you ended up gathering the football. That part did not make any sense to me at all. At that point, I still thought that Russell had Parkinson in his lineup. Turns out he did not. Went with Theo Johnson instead, and that almost certainly cost him the matchup. Stevenson on his bench instead of Jaden Reed. There's a 1.2 point difference. That would have been enough to get you the win as well. Russell's kicker, Mevis, I guess that's how you pronounce his name. He scored 12, and Russell's Bears defense put up 18.91. Russell's starters got to 133.85. versus my 148, so he was 16 down as far as starters go, and his defense and kicker made up that difference. Russell's team scored 7 total touchdowns, but he had 454 receiving yards, which kind of balanced out all the touchdowns that I scored. So in every way, this matchup was absolutely as close as it could get. I hate that I had to do this to you, Russell. I would have much rather done this to any number of other league members. But that is the way the cookie crumbles. I will improve my all-time record versus Russell to 15-7 and our playoff record to 2-0. Beat Russell in the second round on my way to my second championship in 2023. As mentioned last week, that was a 4.1 point victory. Funny enough, I went back and listened to the podcast, only the second ever playoff podcast that I ever recorded between Russell and I, and it turns out that another Green Bay wide receiver played a big factor in that game. I plugged in Dontavian Wicks in that playoff matchup versus Russell in 2023. He ended up outscoring the other two wide receivers I had on my bench by more than 7 points, ended up beating Russell by 4 in that one, so kind of funny how Packers wide receivers played a big role in both of our playoff matchups, both highly contested and closely scored matchups. So both of Russell and I's playoff matchups have a combined margin of victory of less than 5 points. That win gives me my 11th playoff victory all time, puts me into a tie for third place with Matt Beiler and Colton. Sean has 16 playoff wins all time, and Eric is in second place with 13 playoff wins. I think this matchup may have taken a day or two off of my life. I just couldn't believe it. I was like literally having the second best playoff performance of my life in this league. And I was down 20 points. My team had 10 touchdowns and I was losing by 20. Thank you, Rams running backs. Thank you, Josh Jacobs. Thank you, Jason. And thank you, Trevor Lawrence. I mean, what a stud. What a stud. Oh man, feels good. Moving on, your second highest scoring winning team from the Week 15 playoffs.
I'm African-American in America, ain't a hair shit, but a millionaire under 30, so he must be hearing shit.
Oh, no, he didn't. The McAfrican-Americans defeat Come On Man, 121.2 to 111.41. Jim bounces Beiler from the playoffs. The sixth seed overcomes the three seed. Jim sneaking into these playoffs at 6-8, a 6-8 regular season record, pulls it off. We touched on this a bit in last week's podcast. Beiler's team hadn't been incredibly good since he scored 161 in week 8. Never got higher than 129. In fact, he'd only broken 120 twice since week 8. So his team wasn't exactly playing their best coming into this matchup, and it let him down a bit. Jim's team was led in scoring, surprisingly, by DJ Moore. He went for 4 for 69, 2 touchdowns, 20.9 points. Lamar put up 20.1. Jim, sticking to his guns with Lamar, had Caleb Williams on his bench, who scored 5 more points, but decided to stick with Lamar versus Cincinnati. Lamar went 8 for 12. He had 150 and 2. He also had 2 carries for 26 yards. 12 attempts. Absolutely blasted the Bengals in that one. Jim texted me Sunday morning and said Singletary or Mason. I told him Singletary, who scored 1.9 points. Mason ended up with 2.9, so not much of a difference there, so I don't feel too terrible. Devin Neal, Saints running back, went 7 for 28 and 1 for Jim. He also had 1 reception for 4 yards to give him 9.7 points. Not too terrible. Jacoby Myers, 9.6. Pittman, 4.1. Your tight end Fannin had 8.5, and Christian McCaffrey in your flex, 15.2 points. So you missed out on about 6 points on your bench. Didn't need it, as you won by about 10. And your Seattle connection comes through for you again. Jason Myers goes 6 for 6 for 24 points. Seattle's defense, not their best week, but 7.2 out of them. You got 31.2 points combined out of your kicker and defense. So that marks 3 weeks in a row in which they've been over 30 points. They put up 48 combined in week 13, 34 points combined in week 14, and now a little over 31 points combined in week 15. What a combo. Seattle playing LA this week, and that's a Thursday game as well. So we'll see how that fares for you coming into week 16. This matchup was also very close and also finished on Sunday. Didn't quite wrap up after the afternoon games on Sunday, but the majority of players from both teams were done after those afternoon games. All Beiler had left was the Cowboys defense. Beiler had the Broncos defense on his team and has had the Broncos since late September, but decided to pivot. Didn't like the matchup versus Green Bay and thought, J.J. McCarthy's terrible. Cowboys defense is bad, but I think J.J. McCarthy is worse, and boy, was he wrong. Picked up Cowboys defense on Sunday morning, plugged him in, and they ended up going for negative 0.54 points. If he had played the Broncos defense instead, it would have given him about 6 more points, but so not enough to get him the win. But if he hadn't done that and played the Broncos, and then instead played Aaron Jones instead of Quinshon Judkins, would have got him the win. There's 10 points right there, and just enough to earn the victory. Beiler's team was led in scoring by James Cook, who scored 31. He got 21 out of Sutton, 18 out of Love, and 16 out of Barkley. Tet McMillan, 3.5. Alec Pierce, 2.1. Tyler Warren, 3.4. Judkins, 3.2. Your starters got to 100 points, which is 10 more than Jim's. Jim's starters only got to 90. Love had 276 passing yards. You had 235 rushing yards with 3 rushing touchdowns. Only 187 receiving yards with 2 receiving touchdowns. That is a total of 6 touchdowns versus Jim's 6 touchdowns as well. And even though your starters outscored Jim's starters by 10 points, Jim's kicker and defense outscored Matt's kicker and defense by 20. And that's the difference. So it came down to Sunday night, and the Cowboys defense just looks unmotivated. They give up 34 to the Vikings, put Matt Beiler in negative points, and effectively end his quest for back-to-back championships. Jim improves his all-time record versus Matt Beiler to 2-5. This is the first time these two have met in the playoffs, so Jim will hold a 1-0 playoff record versus Beiler. In fact, the only other time that Jim has beaten Beiler was in Week 8 of 2023. This is Matt Beiler's 12th playoff loss all-time. That ties him with me for the most all-time in TJ League history. Matt Beiler now has the most points against in playoff league history as well. So Jim pulls it out. The unlikely victory. Upset for the ages. Gets it done. Jim gets his 3rd playoff win all time and moves on. Matt Beiler's 10-win regular season comes to an end in the very first round. All righty, let's check on waivers, and then we'll talk about the Week 16 matchups.
Waiver wire breakdown. Waiver wire breakdown.
All righty, pop on over to the waiver wire. Pretty slow Wednesday. Slowest Wednesday of the season, and I am not surprised with only four teams still in it. I'll start off by saying I am recording this segment last, even though it's in the middle of the episode. So if I say anything here that contradicts what I'm going to say in the preview segment coming up next, that's why. Top bid this week goes to Amari DeMarcado, Arizona running back, picked up by Jim for $17. Jim has moved on from Singletary. I have moved on from Evan McPherson, put up the goose for me last week, and I'm going with Pinheiro, the San Francisco kicker, which will give me a player on Monday night, as it turns out. Probably not the best matchup, probably not the best kicker, but I like that he was playing Monday night, so I went and got him. Craig went ahead and picked up Baker Mayfield as well, dropping David Montgomery. Not sure if that was a defensive move against me, or if he's looking ahead to that Week 17 matchup at Miami. Either way, interesting move there. And that's it. That's all that happened. Four moves. Actually, just three. I had another kicker as backup. I was going to pick up somebody else in case the Pinheiro move did not go through. But lo and behold, I'll have that the final player playing in our matchup coming into Monday night. Hopefully, I'm still in it. I will be still in it. I'm going to be winning going into Monday night. How about that? How about that? That's a great segue to the Week 16, second round of the Fantasy Playoffs preview.
Next week's preview.
Alrighty then. Colton and Craig coming off of their Week 1 playoff bye, back in action. Both of those teams finishing at 11-3, but Colton with the points lead earned him the one seed and the privilege of playing the lowest remaining seed in the second round. With Jim's upset over Beiler, that means it'll be the 1 versus the 6 and the 2 versus the 4. We'll start off with the 1 versus 6, Colton versus Jim, and I think it's safe to say Jim's got a big hill to climb. Colton currently projected at 152. Whereas Jim is projected at 106.5. It's got to be one of the larger disparities in projections I've seen all season going into any matchup. Wow. If you look at the full box score projections, it'll have both teams sitting side by side, quarterbacks lined up, running backs lined up, and it gives them little check marks depending on which team's players are projected more for each week. I don't think I've ever seen a matchup in which all the check marks are on one side. It's kind of fascinating, actually. Josh Allen projected more than Lamar. Javonte more than Jordan Mason. Bucky Irving more than Devin Singletary. It's kind of hard to believe. Colton's current starting lineup does indeed average 149 week in and week out, whereas Jim's starters are averaging 120, so more than he's projected this week. Probably has some not so great matchups. I do expect Jim to get off to an early lead, considering he's got his kicker defense. Considering he's got his Seattle tandem going on Thursday night versus the Rams, so his defense and kicker looking to outscore their projections. He's got Seattle at 5.1 and Jason Myers at 8.2, so a combined projection of 13. I think it's safe to say they will exceed that, as they have done over the past 5 weeks every single time. Let's just say they put up 30. That's 17 more points than what he's being projected, so that does put him in the 120s. But he's going to need more help than that. It is possible that DJ Moore outscores Nico Collins. DJ Moore taking on Green Bay. Nico taking on Vegas. Houston may not have to throw the ball that much versus Vegas. Jameson Williams, boom or bust. He is your 8th ranked wide receiver on the season so far. Jim needs him to have an absolute dud. Pittman and Waddle projected very close to one another. And news just came across that Tua has been benched. So Miami's rolling out their backup quarterback. This coming week, we'll see how that impacts Jalen Waddle. It's going to be Quinn Ewers in that one for Miami. I could see Fannin outperforming Kittle. McCaffrey over A-Chain. So there are paths to victory here for Jim. It's just that he's going to need Colton to have his worst week of the season. Colton's three losses this year came in week 1, week 8, and week 12. In two of those matchups, he only scored 92 and 90 points. But since week 9, in those five victories he's had in that span, he scored 134, 180, 193, 142, and 174. Funny enough, Colton's team has not scored between 115 and 134 this season. He's either been below 114 or above 134. So Jim's going to need one of those games where he's below 114. I should also mention that two of those three losses that Colton has suffered this year were at the hands of Craig, both week 1 and week 12. Of course, Colton only scored 92 and 90 in those games, whereas Craig put up 123 and 131. Still interesting nonetheless, Colton's other loss came to Teague in week 8. We'll see if Jim sticks with Lamar for this one. Ravens taking on the Patriots. Whereas Caleb Williams on his bench has Green Bay, Caleb Williams currently projected more. Jim also has Devin Neal on his bench in favor of Jordan Mason and Devin Singletary. We'll see if that stays that way as well come game times. Colton is moving on from the Dallas quarterback wide receiver combo of Prescott and Pickens. Can't say I blame him, of course, Josh Allen. But he's going to go ahead and stick with Nico, Jameson Williams, and Jalen Waddle over Pickens. We'll see if that stays the same as well. Colton did a good job of arranging his defenses in preparation for this matchup and next week. Patriots taking on the Jets in week 17. Some of us not given that privilege, unfortunately. If you go through a week-by-week basis, looks like Jim has only outscored Colton 4 times this year out of 15 weeks. So it's safe to say that Colton is a heavy favorite going into this matchup. But we've all seen stranger things happen. Hold my feet to the fire, make a prediction. Hard to go against Colton here. Really is. Some very favorable matchups. Projected to win by 45. There is a path to victory here for Jim, but he's going to need everything to go right. Your other playoff matchup is going to be the 2 seed versus the 4 seed, Craig versus myself. Craig currently projected to win 131 to 124. So a little bit more tightly contested as far as the projections go. I very well may be moving on from Trevor Lawrence. He's got a tough matchup at Denver this coming week, and I really would like the Jacksonville Jaguars to drop that one. That way the Texans can move up into a tie for the top of the AFC South. So I'm secretly hoping that Lawrence doesn't have a great game. Jordan Love didn't do too bad against him this past week. Also have JJ McCarthy on my bench. He's got a very favorable matchup. Going to be playing at the Meadowlands versus the Giants. I'm sticking with the Rams running backs. I've got that duo in my RB1 and RB2 slots. Sticking with AJ Brown. Of course I'm playing JSN. And as of right now, I've got Keenan Allen back in my starting lineup. It's been a pretty tough going for Keenan as of late. Hasn't been in double figures. Hasn't scored a touchdown since week 7. But he's playing Dallas this week. And if there's any defense that a wide receiver can have a bounce back game against, it's the Dallas Cowboys. As of now, I also have Darren Waller in my starting lineup over Kincaid. Josh Jacobs in the flex. We'll see if he plays. He's still dealing with that injury. I'm thinking he will. Hope he does. I was able to plan ahead as far as my defensive matchups go. I picked up the Chiefs in preparation to play them this week at Tennessee. But now with the Chiefs eliminated, I'm not so sure that that's the best play. I still have the Eagles. They're in Washington. And I'm leaning that direction as of right now. I have moved on from McPherson, so he is no longer on the roster. I am wavering on the Keenan Allen versus Higgins or Booty decision. Thinking I'm going to stick with Keenan Allen, but who knows? Could be one of those decisions that makes a difference. Craig, only one quarterback on the roster, Matthew Stafford. Well, he is the number 2 ranked quarterback, so why do you need another one? His running backs have the check marks over my running backs in Dowdle and Henry over Kyren and Corum. And now I've got to deal with Craig's wide receiver onslaught. He's got Puka, CeeDee, Rashee Rice, and why not? Why not just throw Mike Evans in the flex? Craig picked him up a few weeks back for $1. That's the week that I forgot to adjust my dollar amounts on my fab bids. I had a $0 bid in for Mike Evans. And man, if it comes down to that, if it comes down to Craig's $1 waiver wire bid to get Mike Evans, he plays him against me, and that's the difference, I might go outside and throw up. Like Craig did. That draft we had here with the mini shots. Craig's got the Bills D versus Cleveland. And he also has the 49ers on his bench who are in Indy this week.
Craig has a plethora of running backs on his bench to choose from should he choose to pivot in Hubbard, Swift, and Montgomery. Doubt he will, though. Mike Evans looked pretty good last week. Pretty good. Going back through the course of the regular season and last week's matchup, I have only outscored Craig 4 times on the year. Week 3, week 6, 7, and week 15. I guess if it's going to be any of those weeks, I'd rather it be last week. Trending in the right direction. Who knows if Craig even set a full lineup last week anyway? Should be noted, Craig's last loss this season did come in week 7 at the hands of yours truly. Feet to the fire again. This one's interesting, though, because it's the complete opposite of Russell and I last week. We're going to have a lot of guys going on Thursday in this one. I've got Kyren, Corum, and JSN. Those are some big hitters for me. If they come up short on Thursday, I'm going to have a hard time making a comeback. Craig, on the other hand, also has a couple of his big hitters going Thursday in Stafford and Puka. So safe to say Thursday's game's going to be closely watched by both Craig, myself, and Jim with his Seattle duo going. And this, of course, will depend on whether or not he or I make any lineup changes going into the weekend. But a weird schedule this week. There's some Saturday afternoon games. There's a Saturday night game. As of right now, my team will finish up after the noon games on Sunday. I do have Booty playing Sunday night, so if I decide to play him instead of Allen, I'll have that ace in the hole, if you want to call it that. Whereas Craig, as I mentioned, he's got Puka and Stafford going Thursday. He's got 5 guys going Sunday at noon in Dowdle, CD, Rice, Juwan Johnson, and Mike Evans. And then he has Derrick Henry Sunday night. So it looks like it'll all come down to the Yeti in New England. And I'm going to need a lead. Safe to say. I think I mentioned on last week's podcast that I'd rather be playing Colton in this round versus Craig, just based off of how hot Craig's team has been coming into the playoffs. But with Colton's team projected at 150 plus, maybe I did benefit from Jim's win over Byler. Only time will tell. I think I got a shot. Of course, I'm going to predict myself to win. Never would I give Craig the satisfaction of predicting his victory over me to make it to the championship. Never. I can just see him right now in his truck listening to this, smiling, shaking his head, thinking that he's got it in the bag. Well, guess what, motherfucker? Coming for you. I'm going to win, and I'm going to make it back to another title game. Either way, one of us will be playing for our third championship. Colton trying to make it to the championship game to win his second title, and Jim still looking for his first. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I tell you one thing. I'll be watching. Oh, I'll be watching. Okie dokie. I guess that just about does it. I've rambled on for long enough. Jim, I want to wish you all the luck in the world. Definitely pulling for you in this one. If anybody could pull up the upset for the ages, it's you, my man. You could do it. I'd encourage you to give your team a heated and motivated pep talk before this week, because they're going to need it. So I guess that means good luck to Jim, and I wish no luck to Colton and Craig, the top 2 seeds. I hope you both have your worst games of the season. I hope you absolutely fall flat on your face. And I truly hope that this will be the worst fantasy performance and output you've ever had for any team ever. And lastly, Colton and Craig, you two can go fuck yourselves. See you in the championships, motherfuckers!